Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. The Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to take a little trip together. We're going to talk about self-hating individuals in the media. Self-deprecating ethnic humor is the focus today for a couple of reasons. In this confusion of America today because of the gang from Chicago and the great imposter who is playing at president, the man with training wheels, Barack Hussein Obama, people do not know what conservatives stand for, and since he has a compliant media, they would like you to believe that the largest majority of the electorate, the conservative population, has no idea what it stands for. Well, I clearly have defined what it stands for: borders, language, and culture. Many of you can understand what I mean when I say we stand for borders. How hard is that to figure out when we have internationalists who want to not only destroy our borders, which they've effectively done, by permitting unlimited immigration primarily from Mexico, but now they want to destroy the U.S. dollar completely and replace it with an international currency, therefore destroying your entire basis of existence as an American. So we understand what borders mean. If I say language, we know what it means. We don't want a polyglot. We don't want the Tower of Babel. We want the language English in a business place, in a governmental workplace. We don't want to go to the DMV and press 2 for Spanish. But many of you don't know what I mean when I say culture. When I say borders, language, and culture, as I said, you can understand borders, language, but you don't know what culture means. Let me define what I mean by culture, first in the negative. I mean that we conservatives are sick of the sewer pipe that runs out of Hollywood. I mean that we conservatives are sick of the vermin in the media who perpetuate vulgarity, cursing, sexual degeneracy, making a mockery of everything that we believe in. That's what I mean by culture. We're sick of the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood. Case in point, Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, the first rule is what you do is you don't talk about people you don't like because you don't want to give them publicity. You know what? I'm going to talk about someone I detest who needs to be stopped before he brings terrible calamity upon the Jewish people. And this man, in my opinion, is insane. Everyone around Larry David is insane. These are people so insular, so wrapped up in their own insanity that they think they're intelligent because they're making money at it. But as someone asked, is one of America's funniest people actually just an anti-Semite in Jews' clothing? What are we talking about? Who is this man? Many of you never heard of him because you don't get HBO. This fellow, Larry David, a typical Brooklyn type, the type that would have gone into the Garmin Center years ago, instead, he migrated out to Hollywood and produced this vulgarity over the years. Started with a show called Seinfeld. I never saw anything in Seinfeld because I never liked the Woody Allen schlemiel Jew. I never liked the image of the weak Jew. I saw it with Woody Allen. I saw it with people before him. They made me cringe. And then along came Seinfeld, and the average American finally got a picture of what the Jew is, thinking that all Jews are whiny, all Jews are neurotic, and that all Jews are paranoid, all Jews are complainers, all Jews are unethical, all Jews are selfish. In other words, they were Seinfeld. That's who Larry David created, Seinfeld, with the guy, whatever his name is, Jerry Seinfeld. Now the guy goes and creates a new show called Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is shown on HBO, to great acclaim amongst the Hollywood types. Only Hollywood seems to like it. Why? David exemplifies the worst in the Jewish stereotype, and yet he displays them as if they were badges of honor. So they call that brilliant. Why is it brilliant? Well, last night, for example, hit a new low. Last night's episode was the last straw for me because of its anti-Christian hatred. It was called The Bear Midriff. And in it, him and Jerry Seinfeld have to talk to their assistant, Maureen, about her belly-bearing attire. Instead, she's fat, and she wears a top that lets her stomach hang out. So, in other words, the one Christian in the show is shown to be ugly and fat and stupid. And she quits. You follow me? Now it gets even uglier. Larry David takes a pill to increase his flow of urine, and it causes urine to splatter on the wall. He goes to her house to apologize, and his urine splatters on a portrait of Jesus, with the urine coming down from the portrait's eye, and he runs out of the bathroom. The next day, his employee comes in screaming that there's been a miracle, that there's a weeping Jesus in the bathroom, and that she's going to quit her job, and that her and her mother are going to go to churches and talk about this miracle of Jesus weeping in the bathroom. Meanwhile, it's Larry's urine running from the portrait of Jesus. Now, I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you if this you think is appropriate as humor. And if he's such a brave, brazen man, Larry David from Coney Island, New York, what does he have to say about Muhammad? How come the great Larry David feels, well, he can ridicule Jews, nothing happens. He can ridicule Christians, nothing happens. But the great Larry David and his clowns from Brooklyn are surprisingly silent when it comes to the Islamo-terrorists. Isn't that interesting? So I bring us back to the main point, which is self-deprecating ethnic humor. And what I have to do is frame the whole thing again in the context of borders, language, and culture and talk about this. Why? Because some entertainers depend on their own God-given talent to make a living. Think back on the age of Steve Allen. Steve Allen also fought against vulgarity in the media. He never used a dirty word to get a laugh. Every time I turn on HBO, there's another degenerate in front of another staged audience, cursing and screaming in the most vile language imaginable. And people sit there as stooges laughing. And they fall back in many cases on vile racist stereotypes about their own people in order to make a buck. For example, there's a woman named Margaret Cho who does the same thing about Korean people that Larry Davis does about Jews. She puts down her own people to get a laugh out of the audience. But look at the difference between Groucho Marx, who was Jewish, and Larry David. Groucho Marx was one of the most successful comedians of the 20th century. He didn't curse. He didn't put down Jews. But he used his own wit and did not indulge in ethnic stereotypes. Now look at Larry David, the man who created Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. This man revels in perpetuating Jewish stereotypes. He specializes in creating and portraying characters who are weak, neurotic, whining, and vulgar, and all Jewish. And as time goes on, he gets more and more vile and less funny. And I said last night I saw an episode of his show where his character urinates on a picture of Jesus, and the people who are in the house who own the picture of Jesus think that it's a miracle, and he mocks them. I believe every Christian in America should be outraged, and I believe every Christian in America should demand that HBO take the show off in order to send a clear message that you're not going to tolerate any more of this Christian bashing. What if this episode had attacked Muslims? What would the reaction be if it had been a Quran instead of a picture of Jesus that he urinated on? Why doesn't the midstream media seem to care about this? The truth is that the leftists who cry the loudest about racist stereotypes happen to be the ones who do the most to perpetuate them. So Larry David bashes Christians and gets away with it, but he also makes Jews look terrible, as I said to you. Every Jew in his series is angry, dismissive, judgmental, antagonistic, and ungrateful. Every one of them. Every one of them who is a man is seen as a kind of complaining, whining, unethical, paranoid, selfish, and uncaring individual. Not the type of people that you would like to meet. And yet this type of self-hatred portrayed by Larry David is passing for humor. But look at the people he surrounds himself with. All of the characters around them, Jeff Garlin, Richard Lewis, they're Jewish. And all of the characters have similar traits. Most of them completely unflattering. Most of them actually despicable. In fact, I believe that if Hitler were alive and he hired a propagandist to create an image of the ugly Jew, He couldn't do better than to hire Larry David and his group from Coney Island, New York. And that's why I say to you, what has happened to the media in this country that they would produce filth like this that ridicules not only Christians on a regular basis, but Jews themselves by a Jewish cast? In the beginning, the show was quite funny. And something happened around 05 and 06 when he went from humor into self-hatred. For example, he ran an episode about a Seder. A Seder is the Jewish Passover ritual. And during the Seder, he does certain things in it where it is not hilarious, but it's self-deprecating against the customs of his own religion. He portrays Orthodox Jews in the most horrendous fashion. In fact, his portrayal of Orthodox Jews is reminiscent of the cartoons that were published by the Germans and the French during the Nazi period. And as I say to you, I'm used to this with Woody Allen as he portrayed his own people. In fact, before we take our first break, because I want to go into this, before we take our first break, I want to play for you from Woody Allen's stand-up bit where he again shows what it is. Well, let's take the break and we'll come back to Woody Allen putting himself down in a self-deprecating manner, and then we'll go to the self-hating Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm, and then more broadly we will talk about self-hating ethnic humor, and then more broadly borders, language, and culture, and what conservatives believe in right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Talking about the cultural degeneracy of Hollywood, which of course is an old story, but it's reached a new level of madness in this series called Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, who is not at all funny. He seems to be an anti-Semite in Jews' clothing, not only to me, but to many people. You ask yourself, is this what his ancestors dreamed about while they were suffering through the millennia? Is this what they lived for so that they could produce this fallen, vile creature to produce this image of his own people, which will only produce hatred and ridicule? You have to ask yourself what a person will do for a dollar. But then you have to ask yourself, why would HBO produce something like this? The answer is because HBO is run by people exactly like Larry David. People at HBO, people in the entertainment industry, basically think the same way, and they think that this is funny. You pee on a picture of Jesus, urine runs down Jesus' eye, and the dumb Christian, who's also fat and ugly, will actually think it's a miracle, and the dumb Christian will walk around with that picture to the church, and you get a big yuck out of it. As I say, somebody has to say something. Somebody has to stand up to the Hollywood sewer pipe. I hate self-hating ethnic humor. I can't stand it. Now you say, well, all right, you don't have to watch it. No, I don't have to watch it. The Sopranos are over, if you know what I'm saying. And if they're going to produce this kind of vile filth, then you have an obligation to vote with your money. Just as people have done with my show, you have every obligation to do it with their show. So again, who is this guy we're talking about? He's, in my opinion, a very, very demented, self-hating, sick man who first created the schlemiel image of Seinfeld, but that was predated most recently by Woody Allen, another self-hater. Listen to clip 32. You'll understand what I'm talking about.
Got a job on Madison Avenue in New York. A real dyed-in-the-wool advertising agency on Madison Avenue wanted a man to come in, and they pay him $95 a week, and to sit in their office and to look Jewish. They wanted to prove to the outside world that they would hire minority groups, you know. So I was the one they hired, you know. I was the show Jew with the agency. I tried to look Jewish desperately, you know. Used to read my memos from right to left all the time. They fired me finally because I took off too many Jewish holidays.
Are very funny. So I know many women, by the way, who hated Woody Allen. Over the years that Woody Allen was making a name for himself, many women I knew, Christian Jewish women, they hated him. They wouldn't watch him. They said they can't stand the image he portrays of Jewish men. At the time, I wasn't that politically keen about how negative stereotypes can play out in the actual world. So I didn't pay much attention to it, but it was mainly women who alerted me to the image that Woody Allen was portraying. Then along came Seinfeld. I didn't pay much attention because I saw it as just another sitcom. I didn't know what it was about. It didn't really impress me. Now I see that this character, Larry David, created the schlemiel called Seinfeld, and now he created this thing that, which is no longer funny at all, called Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is filled with the most vile anti-Christian, anti-Jewish, frankly, anti-everything that you could imagine. But the character that he portrays is an angry, antagonistic, ungrateful, dismissive, almost alien being that Hitler himself would have been quite happy to portray as the average Jew. Do you understand what I am saying to you? Have you any idea how deadly it is to laugh at things like this? Have you no shame that you would find a man as demented as this funny? And has HBO no concept that you, the subscribers to HBO, can cancel them overnight unless they stop this vile filth, the sewer pipe coming out of Hollywood? And if you think this is the only garbage that HBO produces, you are mistaken. They produce another show called Cat House, glorifying prostitution in the most vile manner out of Las Vegas. I can go show after show after show. I never used to get HBO until The Sopranos came along, and then I bought it only for that. And you know what? I never unsubscribed. But you know what? I'm back here on the Savage Nation to take your calls on this and other topics. But before we take our first break, and before I continue with scenes from this horrendous show and your opinions on it, I would like to say to you that this man, primarily, is bad for the Jews. I believe that the only people who would find Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm something interesting to watch would be the Nazi groups that are emerging around the world. In fact, I wouldn't doubt that groups like this are not running this to perpetuate their own hatred of Jews in order to justify the murderous deeds that they have in mind. And that's why I say to you, be very, very careful what you laugh at, because it just may be you who gets it.
Savage.
Hey, Savage Nation, over the course of this summer and fall, you've heard me talk about a program called Debt-Free Stimulus. Many of you have called, and for you, I say thanks. And for those of you that haven't called yet, I say, why haven't you? Look, here's the deal. If you owe more than $10,000 or more in credit card debt, if you're working and make monthly payments, the time is now to get your life back on track. The holidays are right around the corner, and you owe it to yourself and your family. The number is 800-211-DEBT, 800-211-DEBT, 800-211-DEBT. The holidays are a time for family and cheer, and trust me, happy days can still be had. The number to getting out from under the rubble is 800-211-DEBT, 800-211-DEBT, 800-211-DEBT. Call them now for a stimulus package of your own. It'll really work. 800-211-DEBT. There is no obligation, and you're going to get a thorough and free analysis when you call 800-211-DEBT, 800-211-DEBT, 800-211-DEBT.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage. So we are talking about the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood. Again, why? Because in these confusing times, in these perplexing times, where you are being told that conservatives have lost their way, where conservatives don't know what they stand for, that is the biggest lie of all time. I'll make it very clear. We stand for borders, language, and culture. We know what we stand for. It's guys like Newt Gingrich who stand for nothing and pretend to be conservatives. And so we come back again to the borders. You know what that is. Language, you know what that is. Culture, you don't know. And one of the things conservatives want stopped is the sewer pipe putting out the fecal matter that's called humor, that is coming out of Hollywood, primarily from guys like Larry David and other friends of his from Brooklyn, New York, most of whom don't even understand how vile they actually are. And that's why we're talking about it. Now, you could say self-deprecating humor is in the age-old tradition of self-deprecation. But if you look further, it's not self that is being deprecated by Larry David. It is the Jewish people in general, the Christian people in particular. Again, the characters are all described as somewhat almost all the same. Almost every Jew on that show that is portrayed, whether it be the guy with the bug eyes who had a career 20 years ago and another has-been that he put on there. I forget who that guy is with the big eyes who had a drinking problem and he's on every other night, you know, because they think he's funny. He has a lot of has-been actors and comedians whose careers are over. He probably hires for a song. Like an in-crowd from Brooklyn, New York. And we're all supposed to wish we're on the in-crowd with them all laughing in the restaurant. But, you know, it's hard to laugh when all four characters that are always on the show, Larry David, Richard Lewis, Jeff Garlin, and Susie Essman, with one of the most disgustingly vile mouths you've ever heard in your life, cursing like you can't believe. All of them shown as paranoid, selfish, uncaring, whining, complaining, unethical. Shall I go on? Dismissive, angry, judgmental, antagonistic, ungrateful. Shall I go on? And you say this has no effect on the culture as a whole. I disagree with you. And I am saying that we need to stand up and say enough is enough. Now, if it was just limited to putting down the Jews, you could say, okay, let's look away. But last night was the last straw for me. He pees on an image of Jesus. Urine gets on the eye of Jesus. The girl who owns the house thinks it's a miracle, and he doesn't tell him it's his urine. He doesn't tell the girl that he peed on the picture by accident. She thinks that it's an actual weeping Jesus portrait, and she's going to quit her job and go around the country and show people the miracle of the weeping Jesus. And he thinks it's funny mocking Christianity. You know, I have talked about things like this for over 10 years. I talked about it when the Brooklyn Museum, for example, hired a so-called artist who dipped the crucifix in urine. And another so-called artist, another degenerate drug addict, who put another crucifix in elephant dung. This was all a joke, again, to the Brooklyn types of Larry David's friends from Brooklyn. And I don't understand where the Christian people are in this country. I don't understand where the Catholic League is in this country. I have no idea why they tolerate this. And you say, well, why are you bothering with this? Why do you take the time out? I mean, you should be talking about health care. I don't want to talk about it anymore. We know it's socialized medicine. We know that the gang just wants the health care reform to make trillions of dollars for their friends. I mean, we know that. It has nothing to do with helping people. It has to do with robbing taxpayers. So how many different ways do I have to say the same thing to you? I've said all of them. I want to say about politics for a while. So now I want to go to you for a minute before we come back to some of the sound bites on this show. Stephen in Las Vegas, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage. I just want to take a second to let you know, I mean, I'm a conservative person. I don't watch CNN, and I can't stand anything. I watch Fox News, but it's all a bunch of lies for the most part. But listen to you all the time. Now, here's the context to the show. I've been watching it a lot. Sometimes it gets silly and a little intolerable. But if you look at all the four primary characters that you're condemning, they're losers, Mr. Savage. They're not winners. Larry David is forever on a quest to be loved. He's an idiot. Nobody likes him. No one can stand him. And the last night's show, I just want to correct you really fast here. He doesn't find out that she's a Catholic until after he fires her for her midriff. Her being fired has nothing to do with her being...
Wait. But he pees on the portrait of Jesus in her mother's house, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Now, that is 100% sacrilegious if you're a religious person. And they also take shots at Judaism. They don't take shots at any Islamic, you know, people, but that's because we're paranoid about Islamofascism.
That's right, because the Muslims, to their credit, wouldn't tolerate it.
I'm not giving them a
Give them 100% for not tolerating that kind of defamation of their religion. I'm 100% for it to not put up with this garbage. I thank the Muslims for showing people what it means to be a believer of your own religion. You don't have to kill somebody to say, I'm not going to tolerate this.
Absolutely. But you do have to look at it. They are losers. These are not winners. These are washed up actors like Richard Lewis. That's the name you're looking for. Larry David. They're losers. And you got to look at it.
But you see, the character is not shown as a loser. The character lives in a big house in Hollywood. The character is shown as a retired millionaire. The character is shown as somebody on the in. The character is shown as somebody who knows all these Hollywood actors and actresses who come up to his table. So, no, I don't think he's projecting himself as a loser. On the contrary, I would like to correct you. He shows himself as a winner and was supposed to believe that all Jews who are winners are exactly like this angry, judgmental, antagonistic, ungrateful, dismissive, paranoid character. So I disagree with you, Stephen. I think you have to understand that there are ramifications to characterizations. I want to say that again. How many years did we argue against the use of guns in movies? Do you remember the 80s? I remember it as sure as I'm standing here in a sweatshirt right now. I remember it. I remember what happened in the early 80s. Every movie poster showed a starlet or a star with a handgun in their hand. Every movie that your child went to showed someone picking up a gun who probably never fired a gun in their life, killing somebody, random executions, torturing people, again, by the same twisted minds that have produced this kind of show. So for years, we said, stop showing the gun violence in the movies. For years, we said, stop smoking cigarettes in the movies. There's a campaign to stop showing cigarette smoking in movies. Why? Because they darn well know that people are influenced by movies. They're very powerful. And concurrently, we're told, always show gay characters in a positive light. Always show minorities in a positive light. Always show immigrants in a positive light. And always mock Christians. And if you're going to mock Jews, make sure you're mocking the Orthodox, truly believing Jew. But under no circumstance are you ever to mock the non-believing, fallen Jew or Christian, because that is them. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you understand where I'm coming from, why I'm spending so much time on my show on this? Because I feel enough is enough. Somebody has to say something at some point to somebody. It may be true that I'm not heard by the Hollywood big shots. It may be true that they have successfully not permitted my voice to be heard in Los Angeles. And I know what's going on with them, and I know how they operate. But I still have a very large audience of people ranging from New York, Maine, New York, California, you name it. 10 million people. Somebody is listening to this show in the entertainment business. Somebody is hearing what I am saying. Somebody in the entertainment business who is very important. Both somebody loves me for saying this, and some very dangerous, powerful people in entertainment hate me for this, and they're going to try to make certain that I am punished for this by misquoting what I am saying, taking what I am saying out of context, and trying to do to me what the illegitimate drug-popping, pill-popping government of England did to me in England. But let me tell you something. He who laughs last laughs best. They didn't ruin me in England. They got ruined. Jackie Smith got fired after she tried to do this to me. And if you think I've rolled over, you're mistaken. I never quit. I always come out for the bell. I'm always ready for a fight that is righteous. I am going to fight this to the end of my days, and I'm going to win. My book, Banned in Britain, just came out. Many of you probably received it by today. That's just the beginning. Don't think because I stopped talking about Banned in Britain that I've given up or that it's over. Oh, no, my friends. The fight has just begun. And in the same way, I'll fight for what I think is right. And I am telling you, Larry David is not only, in my opinion, the epitome of the mentally ill liberal. You know, I wrote the book Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. If these people don't look like mentally ill people cavorting as rich, successful Hollywood types who literally urinate on everything, including everyone's religion, I'd like to know what is an example of an insane person. Who would do a thing like this for a buck? Who would urinate on a picture of Jesus and mock a Christian woman as if to say all Christian women are fat and ugly and can easily be mocked because they're stupid enough to believe in Jesus? Who would do this? I'm asking you. Who in the world would publish a thing like this? Who in the world would produce a thing like this? Who in the world would promote a thing like this? Who in the world would broadcast a thing like this? The answer is people from Sheepshead Bay, New York, who run Hollywood. That's my opinion. Do you get it? Now, if it was limited to Larry Davis and Jews, you wouldn't be interested. The Sopranos were the same problem for the ordinary Italian. There was a comedian years ago you probably never heard of. He was before my time in the 40s. My father used to tell me about him. It was a black man named Stepan Fetchit. He played a self-deprecating, servile black man in the most stereotypical manner. The whites loved it. They loved seeing a weak black man stooped over saying, yes, sir, to everything that the white man said and did. He made a fortune, Stepan Fetchit. I have said that Larry David is the Jewish Stepan Fetchit. I've said that to you. But you see, I wasn't around when Step and Fetch It was around. I'm around right now while Larry David is around, and I'm saying enough is enough. What do you say? I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is what I'm saying to you. In other words, the media is telling you as a conservative that you're lost. There's no conservative movement. You don't know what you stand for, that you should be a nice Republican and go along with the program of being Democrat light, that socialism is good as long as it has an R next to it. And I'm saying, no, you're wrong. We conservatives believe in borders, language, and culture. And today I'm emphasizing what I mean by culture, focusing on the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood, specifically the self-hating ethnic humor that's coming out, and the vile language that's coming out from HBO in a show called Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, there's a historic context to this. This is not the first time that a man has chosen to ridicule himself and his people to make a buck. In fact, I have in my hand a rebooted DVD of a piece they call perhaps the most offensive album ever made called Jew Face. It's every stereotype ever imagined done around the turn of the century, I mean, when the Victrola first came around. And it's all self. When Moisey with his nose leads the band and things like that. So you look at this propaganda and you say, God, this is the kind of stuff that Hitler produced of the ugly picture of the Jew in order to make people hate the Jew so they could kill them. Shoved them into gas chambers, saying that they were less than human. They were subhumans. And you look at the traits that Larry David exemplifies, not only in his character, but in almost all of the other characters he surrounds himself with, complaining, they're unethical, they rob even children of small things. They rob candy from a restaurant. They will take anything that's not nailed down. They're paranoid, they're selfish, they're uncaring. I'm asking you, you don't think that this has a negative impact on the way people see Jews? And then again, it's the same with the Sopranos. Every Italian a wise guy. Every Italian a gangster. Every Italian a criminal. Go into any ethnic group and you'll find the same thing. Kansas City, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, this is nothing more than evil incarnate. And in a society that can't quite murder Christians yet, we'll just pee on their crucifixes and their pictures and stuff like that.
Well, thank you for seeing how offended I was. I got so angry when he peed on the picture of Jesus. I said, they can't be doing this. They can't get away with this. It got worse, though. He mocked the religion itself.
It's just evil incarnate. That's why people are flying airplanes into buildings. It is, you've got to look at it as the manifestation of an evil being that has finally let go of what soul they have, has been filled with an empty void, and they carry through with this stuff. They're empty voids.
So, in other words, in your opinion, Larry David and his gang are the incarnation of evil. That evil actually has a face. Evil actually has a body. Evil actually exists. And evil is not always associated with murder, is it?
No.
You see, people think that when you say evil, it has to be the guy who flew a plane into the World Trade Center. Sure, that's evil. But evil is also doing things like this through images.
One thing that helps win wars is the people that sit in the middle, and they're the empty vessels that are waiting for one side to win or not, and they will choose the side that appears to be winning, and they will go with that side. They're empty vessels. They wait to be filled with something that's going to make them make a decision one way or the other.
So you're referring to which audience now?
Well, basically anybody that can't stand for any kind of belief, and they are...
So in other words, Larry David represents, in attacking his own people that he comes from, particularly the Orthodox Jew who actually believes in God, he is representing what the atheist himself epitomizes then.
Yeah.
So he is epitomizing the atheistic, religious-hating American, the so-called sophisticated urbanite, the type that you would find marching around thinking he's superior to everybody on the planet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and you remove all the flesh, and you'll probably see a spirit there.
Mark, why would a creature like this get so much attention today from HBO. Why would HBO choose these times to glorify this type of hatred?
Other empty vessels, Michael.
Mark, are you yourself a religious man?
I am a believer. I cannot be a Christian without the Jew first.
Interesting. So when I see the Muslim as portrayed in movies, the terrorist who says the non-believer, the infidel, is a non-person, in a way you actually agree with him. Mark, are you there? Would you say that when the Muslim says the non-believer, because does the Muslim actually believe that the Christian is a non-believer?
No, I think that the Muslim believes that the Christian is... There are two religions that are absolute in this world, and one is Islam and one is Christianity. They both have parallels that are similar along those lines. One uses the means to promote their faith through the tip of the sword. The other one uses the word of God as the sword. And
Islam, in its peaceful form, respects the believing Jew, respects the believing Christian. Those who have hijacked Islam believe that only those who practice Islam are capable of being a full person. All the rest are either going to be converted or killed. So there's a schism within Islam. I understand that. Some are 9th century throwbacks, the Islamists, and the others are more or less willing to live with everyone else as long as they're left alone. I understand that as well. But coming back to the atheist as portrayed by Larry David, your depiction of him as pure evil is very interesting to me. I actually didn't go there, but it forces me to actually reconsider what evil actually is.
Well, why didn't he use Bozo the Clown to pee on, you know? Why did it have to be a picture of Jesus?
Interesting. In other words, it starts out with him takes a remedy to help his urine flow, and it causes splatter. So he goes in her bathroom, and it doesn't hit a clown portrait. It hits a portrait of Jesus, more particularly a drip of urine coming from the eye of Jesus. And this is considered funny amongst the boys from Sheepshead Bay who are mocking Christianity and getting away with it. This is what I'm getting at. Somebody has to say, you're wrong, you're vile, you're sick, and you're evil. I'm doing it today. And let the chips fall where they may. That's all. I know I'm taking a chance doing this. I know who runs the Hollywood mob. I know who runs the entertainment industry. I know who runs everything that I'm in. You think I'm not doing this and I'm an idiot? You think I'm an ignoramus and I don't understand what I'm doing to myself here? You're mistaken. But if a man doesn't stand up for what he believes, and he may as well quit talk radio, he may as well become just another shill for the Republican Party and call himself a conservative. But that's not me, my friends. You're going to get it like I see it. And the way I see it is this show has got to go. This show has got to go, and this show also owes Christians a list and demand that this show be yanked. It's enough urinating on a picture of Jesus.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. The Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
There's your bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Second door on the right.
You've got to see this.
Come here. God.
Come here.
Oh, oh my God. Oh.
What?
Look at Jesus.
Oh. 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 Oh.
We are talking about one of the sickest shows ever made, If it was just sick, we wouldn't be talking about it. But we're talking about a show that is glorified as brilliant, a show that is considered the epitome of the inside of Hollywood. And last night was the last straw for me when the main character portrayed by Larry David urinates by accident on a picture of Christ, and he mocks not only Christians but the Christian religion itself. He does this as well in his gross portrayal of Orthodox Jews, who feature prominently throughout his shows. And whenever he shows an Orthodox Jew, they are reminiscent of the cartoons that were published by the Germans during World War II. The only thing missing are the grossly elongated noses. He ridicules religious observance. He makes Jewish people seem like aliens. He mocks their sounds. He makes all of the characters into dismissive, judgmental, antagonistic, angry, ungrateful. Shall I go down the list? Whining, complaining, unethical, paranoid, selfish, and uncaring. So you could say he's just another self-hatred, another type that hates himself. But I would disagree with you. This type loves himself. You could say that Woody Allen was a self-hating personality, but I would say no, Woody Allen was a narcissist who loved himself. But he loved the part of himself that most of us would find repulsive. And of course there is a market for the repulsive. And so last night, as I say, was the last straw with the anti-Christian hate that came out of this show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I've also talked about this in the bigger context. People say conservatives are irrelevant in America today. They're lying to you. The latest Gallup poll shows that conservatives account for the largest single voting bloc in America. How did that happen? Because they know who Obama is. They know that he surrounded himself by radical left-wing, communist, socialist, you fill in the blank. And many independents have moved to the conservative side. And then we wake up to find that Newt Gingrich is backing a liberal Republican in New York State and attacking conservatives as being out of the mainstream. Because, again, they're setting us up for another McCain-like fall guy so they can continue the march toward the New World Order. And that is an extremely dangerous picture, by the way. But to get back to why I'm talking about this today instead of the war. Yesterday I told you, and a week ago I told you, and a month ago I told you, and 2 months ago I told you there would be an anti-war movement in this country, but that it would probably come from the right, not the left. And I was right. Captain in the Marines, member of the Foreign Service, resigns over the Afghan war. He says he no longer knows why his men are fighting, why the nation is fighting. And in fact, he goes to the next step and he says, we're actually increasing the recruitment amongst the Taliban. You know, he has been there and he has done that. So I understand how things really work. And what I'm saying to you is how things really work is, if that's what you think is the way to get the message across, or start your church group to start a letter-writing campaign to the HBO executives. Start a chain of that many subscribe to this. Do what you have to do to say, I'm not accepting a picture of Jesus being urinated on and Christians being mocked by this self-hating, hateful individual in the show called Curb Your Enthusiasm. Sopranos made Italians squirm, okay? Rap musicians make blacks squirm. Shall I go down the list of stereotypes? There's a woman named Margaret Cho who puts down Koreans. She's Korean. And audiences that are hired to sit there and laugh as professional laughers laugh at Koreans when she ridicules her own people. This is nothing new. But the newness about this is the level of hatred and antipathy towards religion as exemplified by Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm, not only last night, but throughout the series, the way he mocks Christians and Jews. Last night it was Christians. A few other times he made a mockery of Christians. But largely he bashes Jews and makes Jews look terrible. In my hand I have a reproduction from the original 78 RPM discs and wax cylinder recordings of a show called Jew Face, done God knows when, I don't know, 1920 era. Again, what was it? It was Jewish vaudevillians trying to make a buck by mocking long noses, cheapness, all the stereotypes of Jews that hopefully Jews have been able to move away from. And then when the Jewish person wakes up, and there we have again Again, Larry David doing what Hitler did to the Jew. Again, portraying Jews as in the most negative way possible. In every series, by the way. Every series, in one way or another, he creates a disgusting image of the characters around himself and his own religion. So if you'd like to comment on any of this, I'm open for it. New York City, Brad, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, I was going to make a point that, you know, these people aren't practicing Jews at all. Like, they don't really probably don't even know the first thing about Judaism, but if you look at this pathetic Larry David's role in the show, you know, he drives the Prius. He's into dating interracially, you know, he's very PC, supports, like, the NRDC, and, you know, basically that's obviously, you know, a big theme of the show, but I think that this whole thing is part of, like, a larger plan from those, you know, at HBO and those who control the media to basically embrace, you know, Obama as the new Messiah and liberalism as the new religion. And in order to...
Well, I don't even think they care about Obama, but we certainly know that they would have been behind pushing Obama, because I know it for a fact. I know about the fundraisers in Beverly Hills. Trust me, I know an awful lot about these things that they may not be aware of. I know who supported him, Hollywood down to the dollar, probably. But that's unimportant. They're entitled to support whoever they want or oppose anyone they want in the political system that we have. What's important is that the man who was once funny is not funny. It's full of hatred, and it's full of self-hatred. On a portrait of Jesus, I think that crosses the line, which is why we are talking about it today. That's all. Albany, New York, John, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I wanted to make 2 points. One is that it seems to me that it's very telling that the drops were in the eye of Jesus and were mistaken for tears, because tears we normally associate with crying, which cleanses the soul and the eyes. But these were mistaken for tears, and it shows that it was a great insult to the Lord, because by putting urine in his eye, he's basically denying the purity of the Savior and his greatness and his ability to work the many miracles he did. The other thing is that to produce destructive material is a downhill effort. It doesn't require any constructive, creative effort at all. Everything that goes downhill leads to destruction. And people choose either one way or the other. Either they choose to live constructive lives, or they choose to live destructive lives.
And no, I understand. And the show is all about destructive, negative stereotypes, just as the Brooklyn Museum, run by friends, no doubt, of this Hollywood mob, because I know exactly who was running the Brooklyn Museum at the time, permitted an exhibit of art of a crucifix and urine. Remember that scandal in the 90s? Remember that one?
Yes, I do.
All right, well, this is worse than urine. This is worse than a crucifix immersed in urine. This is urine immersed in a portrait of Jesus. And I'm saying there has to be a payment for this. There have to be ramifications for this. That's all. I think that Hollywood has to be stopped. I think Hollywood needs to be told in no uncertain terms by 10 million Christians that we're going to stop you. One way or the other, we're putting you out of business if you don't stop this. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're going to move on in a minute from the self-hatred of Larry David, which is obvious to anyone who understands what this is and the tradition in which it exists. And many of you can say that you shouldn't take it that seriously because it's only entertainment. And I say you're wrong. Just as in the 80s when they started to show every starlet and star with a gun in their hand, which led to an epidemic of handgun violence amongst our youth. Just as they made heroin chic, which led to a heroin epidemic in America, which has not yet been stopped. Just as Hollywood has the power to make murder cool, to make the use of heroin cool, to smoke cigarettes cool, they can also make other things cool or uncool. And that's why I say it's worth talking about. New York City, WOR. Jack, you disagree. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, with all due respect, I'm, is Larry David tasteless? Yes. Is he brilliant? The answer also is yes. And it's a certain, you know, type, he plays the part of a schnook. and, you know, who's always doing bad things and wrong things. And and that's who Larry David is in that particular character.
I understand, but that's all well and good. But why would he then urinate on a portrait of Jesus and mock Christians? Don't you think that's a little different?
No, he accidentally urinated on the portrait.
Right. But he wrote the series. He accidentally urinated, so that's even worse. So that the Christian is so stupid to Larry David that they think that urine on a painting can be seen as a Jesus, weeping Jesus. That's how dumb Christians are. That's the message he sent.
Well, I don't think, you know, I think you have a right to feel that he's sending that message. I think he was just trying to be funny in a very...
Yeah, he was trying to be funny, but what I'm saying is he's insane if he thinks that's funny. And HBO is insane if they think America thinks that's funny.
Well,
in other words, as a caller said in the last hour, when he accidentally urinates on a painting from a splash from a toilet, why couldn't it have been on Bozo the Clown, a picture of Bozo the Clown instead of Jesus? He pointedly picked a picture of Jesus so that the girl would say, oh my God, there's a miracle occurring. So he makes a mockery of the girl, makes a mockery of Christianity, makes a mockery of miracles, which millions of Americans believe in. I don't think that's brilliant. I think it's evil.
What about Borat?
Okay, that's an interesting one. I haven't paid as much attention to Borat as I have to this, because Borat was like a one-shot thing. I mean, what do you think of Borat? I mean, I watched it. It was okay. It was funny. I mean, the first time you see it.
I thought it was very funny. I mean, it was incredibly edgy, more edgy than this in many ways. I mean, talk about Jewish edgy. I mean, throwing dollar bills at roaches who were supposed to be Jews in some way. I mean,
hold it. You're answering in some ways one of the reasons for my outrage. It's very easy to get an audience if you denigrate your own people. For example, I can guarantee you if a Muslim got up and slammed Islam in a fake theater filled with fake laughers, which they have, and made one joke after another about, you want to hear about Muslims? Let me tell you. You think halal is a big deal? You know why we don't eat pork? And to go down the list and let a Muslim get up and bash his religion and his practices and his customs, he's on the road to stardom. Why doesn't that happen? Answer the question. You know why it doesn't happen, because he'd be killed.
There happens.
It wouldn't last a week.
To be a very edgy comedian who is a Muslim and makes fun of Muslims. I saw him with my son just the other day. I think it was
who? Who would that be? I've never seen him.
I can't. Let me ask my son if he remembers this.
But wait, hold it. But Jack, would that Muslim comedian, so-called, have in any of his humor attacked Christians or Jews?
I don't recall if he did or he didn't.
And the reason he wouldn't is because he understands it would put Muslims in a bad context. If he were to show Muslims as mocking Christianity or Muslims mocking Jews, it would make Muslims look terrible. And that's what I'm getting at. I don't care what Larry... What I care about is what he's doing to the image of the Jew to the world. How long can you project images of a whining, complaining, unethical, paranoid, selfish, uncaring, thieving individual who is also dismissive, angry, judgmental, ungrateful, and also as petty as they come until people finally say, oh, all Jews are like that?
I would say to you that his portrayal of the other Jews on the show, the Orthodox Jews, is what sickens me most. I really get personally offended, although I must admit I don't shut it off. The guy is hysterical, but I can't stand his portrayal, like, for instance, in recent shows of a Holocaust survivor and this you know, whining, as you said before. Now, that gets my goat much more than the last show got my goat.
Right. He once did a show about an Orthodox girl in a sequence called Skiing. Her name is Rachel. And everything about her is about a woman who is nasty, angry, dismissive, judgmental, ungrateful, antagonistic. So he sees all Orthodox females in this light, is that right?
Not really. I mean, he sees himself in a worse light. He shows himself in the worst light of all.
Well, you know, the hypocrisy bothers me as well. These liberals in Hollywood fund all of these groups that try to lecture the rest of us about not stereotyping people, accepting people, don't put people down. And here he does, he puts down people day and night, mainly Jews and Christians. So they're hypocrites on top of it all. And they fund, every day they're funding another group to cut out the racial stereotyping, to accept illegal immigrants. All immigrants are saintly, and all Christians are evil, gun-owning, flag-waving, lunatic bigots. You think I don't know what he's saying here?
I don't think he's trying to say anything in particular other than the fact he's trying to be funny.
Okay, but funny is as funny does. There is funny, and then there is disgusting. And then beyond disgusting, there is dangerous. I am saying this is not funny. It is beyond disgusting. It is dangerous propaganda. It is the type of propaganda that Hitler tried to achieve with his imagery of the nasty, hook-nosed, mercenary Jew. And we know what that led to, don't we, Jack?
Yes, we do. But people, you know...
Hold it a minute. Let's not jump over that. We're not allowed to even talk about the Taliban in such negative imagery. Our soldiers can't even refer to the Taliban in this way.
Savage.
Talking about the Hollywood sewer pipe today on the Savage Nation as part of our overall view of what conservatives believe in terms of borders, language, and culture. And when we say culture, we're saying we're sick of the filth that comes out of Hollywood, the vile filth, and it's getting worse by the day. You can't turn a show on without seeing a woman having sex with another woman on HBO. Let's start with that. You turn on a show that's supposed to be humorous, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and it shows him urinating on a picture of Jesus and the dumb Christian thinking it's a miracle. I want to tell you that there are ramifications for propaganda. You could say, well, it's only humor. I want to tell you that racist stereotypes of this nature, whether it be against Jews or Christians, have an effect upon people. Whether or not these people understand what they are doing is irrelevant to me. All I know is that HBO is broadcasting it. I have in my hand a book called The Art and Politics of Arthur Zyk, S-Z-Y-K, published by the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. I've had this for 10 years. I've talked about it maybe three times in 10 years. Zyk was an illustrator, one of the most creative book illustrators and caricaturists of his time, who began in medieval manuscript illumination, Persian miniature painting, and he redirected his artistry during World War II into political cartoons that changed the face of the Nazi enemy and mobilized popular opinion. In other words, the images, for example, of the fat, evil Nazi, the images in the Pacific Theater of the buck-toothed, ugly Japanese were created by Zyk. Now, why did he do it? He did it as part of the war effort. He was a propagandist, and he mastered the art of persuasion through his propagandist caricatures. He permitted the imagery of the monstrous Japanese, the ugly Nazis, in other words, the racial stereotypes of this nature, to permit our men to go to war and kill them before they were killed themselves. In other words, he dehumanized the enemy. Now, I want you to see the kind of wars we've been fighting since Clinton took office. No imagery, never mind imagery, you can't even mention who the enemy is. A man whose son died in 9/11 wants to put on his tombstone, killed by Islamic terrorists, and the cemetery won't even let him put the name of those who killed his son on the tombstone to show you how far we have fallen as a nation and what danger we are in because of the insanity of liberalism and liberals. And so you say, well, we should all be against racial stereotypes. Oh, we should be? So the very liberals who tell us we should be against racial stereotypes make a fortune by portraying them. That's what I'm talking about. And I've spent almost 2 hours on this today. Never thought I would. But to me, it's as important as anything. If you're going to talk about conservatism and you want to be marginalized and mocked by these vermin, go ahead and do it because I'm not going to be mocked by them. They all think they're so smart, all of these high school dropouts, all these drug addicts and alcoholics who got lucky in Hollywood because we have such an idiotic populace in this country that they think that this kind of vile, racist, stereotypical art is something to be promoted. I don't. I'm against it. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, here is a piece from last night's show on HBO where he pees on a portrait of Jesus, and the dumb, idiotic Christian woman is portrayed by the genius from Brooklyn, Larry David, falls for it. Listen.
Yesterday, it was actually right after you left, a miracle happened. I went into the bathroom, and I called my mother in because there is a painting hanging up of Jesus. It's beautiful. And he's got a tear coming down on his face.
Really?
A real tear that was never there before.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That's odd.
It's a miracle. He chose us.
Wow. Are you sure it wasn't, you know, water?
So this is Larry David's genius. Weeping Jesus, which millions of Christians believe in around the world. The religion itself is turned into a mockery and a cartoon by the man from Sheepshead Bay with his gang of ex-drug addicts and alcoholics, his entourage from Brooklyn, who are out of down on their luck, and they get a piece in the show as long as they laugh at him and say he's a genius. So I've done my part to show you the danger that we are in this society today, and how it's coming at us from every angle, and how the worst of it is actually not coming from Washington, but it's actually coming from Hollywood, and how the sewer pipe of Hollywood, which we talked about at great length in the 90s, has actually gotten more toxic rather than less toxic. The toxicity of what comes out of Hollywood today is far worse than it was 20, 10, 5 years ago. I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. I open it up to callers from around America on this show, which has nearly 400 stations and almost 10 million listeners. And I will take your calls right now on the Savage Nation. Let's begin here in the San Francisco area. Sarah, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I want to thank you, first of all, for letting people know what HBO is broadcasting. I don't get that station, and I'm really glad. I'm devastated by what they've put out there.
In addition to this, every other show at night, which they call softcore pornography, is of a woman making it with another woman as the norm in sexuality. Why would they portray that in their sexual scenes? Every other night portraying lesbianism. Every night, every sex scene is a lesbianism, as though it's the norm for young girls to follow. Why do they do that?
I don't know. I can't imagine. I want to make two points. One, even if our liberals or whoever it is, you know, the dollar-hungry Hollywood media, even if they're behind, if they have no relationship or understanding of a faith-based life, or if they don't have any other gods but themselves in their lives, even at that, I don't understand how they could find misplaced urine something to laugh at. I don't get how that's funny.
Because it mocks Christians. Don't you understand, Sarah? Don't you understand how the mind from Sheepshead Bay sees the world? Don't you understand the mind of Hollywood? Don't you understand how far they have fallen from the age of Groucho Marx or Steve Allen to this degenerate, low-life stumble-bum who passes himself off as a genius? Sarah, New York City, Mirella, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir, for having me on the line. I just want to mention that the producers knew exactly what they were doing the moment they put that picture of Jesus Christ in the bathroom, from the last moment when that woman started imagining that Jesus Christ was crying. No Christian, no religious man or woman, it doesn't matter what religion they are, they will never put anything religious in the bathroom in the first place.
Interesting. That's really well put. So you're saying the producers of HBO knew what they were doing from step one to mock Christianity?
Absolutely. 100%, 10,000%.
Did you see this show, Mirella?
No, sir, but I hear it now on the radio.
Interesting. Wow, how observant you are. That here I am spending 2 hours outraged by this sickness and this attack on Christianity and Jews, and you're saying that although you didn't see it, you notice the flaw in the sense that no real Christian would ever put a portrait of Jesus in a bathroom to begin with. That's amazing.
There will be no Bibles in the bathroom. There will be no Torahs in the bathroom.
Amazing. Mirella, you know, the genius of my audience. I have no words for it other than thank you for helping me. And Marella, for the miracle of what you just observed, without, it's like you see without seeing. It's as though you could walk around without eyes and see. See through the filth and the turmoil that you live in. Let me send you a free copy of my new book, Band of Britain, which just got shipped out today, and many people are getting it, and I want it as a personal gift to you. Would you accept that for me? Please stay on the line. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Rick in New York City. Rick, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Your monologue was spectacular. I was awestruck. I went down to my knees. I couldn't believe it was so brilliant, so beautiful. Thank you very much.
Well, let me react to this, Rick. I didn't intend to spend more than 5 minutes on this, and I even thought about whether I should do it at all, given who runs Hollywood and runs the entertainment industry and given their power over this country. I said, you know, you have enough enemies. Why do you want to make them even bigger enemies? And you know what I said to myself after that, Rick? I said, you know what? What's the point of doing talk radio unless you're going to do it the way it is and call it the... And this is the way I see it. I don't know how else to do radio anymore, Rick.
Sir, as an old Errol Flynn movie, Objective Burma is men go, I'd follow you down the barrel of a cannon. And that's what I do. I'd follow you down the barrel of a cannon.
Well, I see what's going on in this country, and someone's got to stand up and stop it, because I can tell you what's coming. When you see a quisling like Newt Gingrich coming out and attacking conservatives and backing a liberal under the guise of a Republican in upstate New York, I know what they're doing. They want to do another McCain on us. They want to run another fall guy so Obama can have another 4 years. I see that from a mile away. I could see what's coming, Rick.
God,
and I'm telling you, I have to talk to my conservative base, which represents a phenomenal number of people in this country, and I'm not going to let up and suddenly move to the center simply because it's politically expedient to do so. I thank you for your comments. Thank you very much. There's so much more I want to do right now. I don't have much time for it. We have a piece on the other side, on the positive side, of Steve Allen. Can we play a bit of that? Now, Steve Allen was a great comedian. He had a large audience. He made probably 10 times the money in his time than this Larry David character ever made, because he was multi-talented. He wrote songs. He was an entertainer of the highest order, and he never said a dirty word. And by the way, I've never used a dirty word. Listen to this show. Listen to Steve Allen, and this is from an interview I did with him live while he was living. What year was that? 2000? My God. Play this now. I want to hear a bit of it.
Right now, I guess we have our guest, one of my favorites, Mr. Steve Allen. Is Mr. Allen with us?
Yes. How you doing?
Steve, I grew up on you, you know.
Well, get off me.
You are appalled at, I guess, what, filthy language and filthy images on television?
Television and radio, yeah, especially in regard to how we'll be exposed to children. If everybody on Earth were 57, it's none of my business. But we got a lot of kids listening to this stuff and seeing it.
And what would you like done?
Well, to talk about ideals, I'd like everybody to knock it off, but the world has never run that way. Sometimes people have talked to me the last 3 or 4 days about the ad, and they said, hey, this is pretty heavy, hard-hitting stuff. And I thought back to an old joke that I think goes back to about the turn of the century, when there were a lot of country jokes. A farmer has a notoriously stubborn mule, which can't be trained to do anything, does whatever it wants. So a guy comes along and says, I can take care of that mule for you. I can fix it. So the farmer says, go ahead. So the guy picks up a club, gives the poor mule a terrible whack over the head. And the farmer says, why'd you do that? And the guy says, well, first you got to get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old line.
Now, are you
well, you get the drift of it. Who is going to wield the club on HBO? That's what our government is supposed to do. Instead, the government is wielding the club on us. I'll be right back.
Savage.
People are perplexed right now. We have a communist socialist government running America, even though America has moved to the right. The majority of the people, by the latest Gallup survey, are conservative. And yet we have a government of a very small cabal of radical, extreme radical, left-wingers, socialist, communist, however you want to put it. Any European understands this because they understand what communism and socialism looks like. Americans are naive. They don't know what anything looks like. They are told what it looks like by the entertainment and the news industry, which controls every image in this country. I'll give you an example. Even women today are confused as to how they should look. I don't mean women over 40. They grew up at another age. They're pretty secure in who they are, other than being exploited by Madison Avenue. They're pretty much, they know what a woman is. Go to, you know, I have a website, michaelsavage.com. 1.4 million people, is it a week, a month? I don't know. Go on it a week. I don't know. It's pretty big now. I put up two pictures, one from Germany of anorexic models that are now in vogue. These girls weigh 80, 90 pounds. They look like they're Holocaust victims, and they're using them in Germany now as models. To counter that, above it, I have pictures of a woman bodybuilder from Sweden who looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime, but she is a woman, obviously, with breasts. Two extremes. Why am I putting these pictures up? Because I want you to understand that we're living in a world of flux where even a woman, even the young girl today, doesn't know who she is supposed to look like. A girl doesn't know what she's supposed to be like. A girl has no idea how to behave in this society anymore. Every image that she sees creates a conflict in a young girl. You see them in the malls. You see some of the suburban mothers trying to be their friend, dressing in the tight jeans with the Jezebel outfit with their daughter. And they don't understand why the daughter goes awry or goes astray. They don't understand why at 16 suddenly she has to be put into rehab. They have no idea why the daughter winds up that way without understanding that they themselves were not supposed to be their daughter's best friend, but their daughter's role model, their daughter's mentor, and their daughter's red light as well as her green light. Now, I've talked about that many times. It has not fallen on deaf ears exactly. People who have children generally agree with me. People who don't have children and live only for themselves can mock me all they want, but I know exactly what I am talking about. So that's what I'm trying to get across here. You say images, it's only humor, or I take it so seriously, you're only giving them publicity. I've heard all of that, and I've considered all of that. But at a certain point, you have to step out from behind those considerations and stand up for what you see as a trend and try to put a stop to it before it's too late altogether. Where will this country be on an entertainment level 5 years from now if they're not stopped? The government was supposed to stop this kind of thing. Do you remember during the era of Reagan when you had Jack Valenti in the Motion Picture Association? Now, Valenti was a front man for the Hollywood cabal. We know that. And he did a very good job. But we were even told by Jack Valenti that the industry didn't need any kind of censorship. The industry didn't need any controls. They only needed labels, and they would self-censor. They controlled themselves. Well, they didn't, did they? They got worse. So you say you're the ultimate censor. You don't have to buy HBO. That's right. And you could also cancel it. That's also true. That's absolutely true. You have the power not to go to the movies, and most Christians don't. You have the power not to get HBO, which most Orthodox Jews, I know all Orthodox Jews don't get it because they don't watch television. And probably believing Christians don't watch HBO to begin with. But many people who are educated and intelligent and decent people otherwise do have HBO, as I do. And I got it only because they had The Sopranos back in 99. And frankly, I never canceled it after the series was more or less over. Because, you know, you go along, you have too many things to do in your life. Well, things change. And we have to take control of our society's culture as much as we have to take control of our society's political orientation. We can see what happens when we let a Republican Party go rogue on us and get out of control and run a front man like John McCain in order to throw the election to the radicals in the Democrat Party. And we see that at the end of the day, it was George Bush who gave us Barack Obama. I mean, don't say there was no connection. It's a direct connection. George Bush and his Republican cohorts built the skids upon which the bad ship Obama was launched. Mark that down. Set that in stone. Now you say, well, wait a minute. How could this be? After all, George Bush was a conservative. Really? What kind of conservative? Well, he got us into a war in Iraq. Oh, really? And did Obama get you out of war in Afghanistan? No. Well, George Bush was a conservative. He was against, what was he against? He was against nothing. George Bush was a liberal. Only he had you deceived into thinking he was a conservative. And so you say, well, why did they want Obama to win, not McCain? The answer is simple. Because the Republican thieves sacked the Treasury for 8 straight years, primarily by running up the biggest deficit in American history and by corrupt contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the Heat got too hot for them. The way the game is played, they put the Dems in for the next 8 years. Now, whether or not they wanted Obama or Hillary is irrelevant. They just wanted the party, the next party in the shell game, to run it for the next 8 years. And make no mistake about it, the way the pinball game is rigged is the Dems get 8 years no matter what you think. Many of you say, oh, the 2010 elections, we're going to show those Democrats, we're going to put in those repubs. Well, I don't care what you do. I can guarantee you that the next election already is planned to who the president is going to be, and it's not going to be Sarah Palin, because any true conservative is stepped on, crushed, and thrown down the toilet before that conservative can get to the first base. Just take a look at the hack, the GOPAC tick, whatever his name is, Newt Gingrich, and see who he's backing in upstate New York to understand how the defunct Republican Party is the other side of the coin of the Democrat Party.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The best way to begin is to talk about what's on MichaelSavage.com. Look at the headline story from the New York Times. Conservatives take on the GOP in pivotal New York race. Conservatives from around the country are fighting to preserve what they see as the integrity of the Republican Party, where the sellout, Newt Gingrich, who I pilloried as the GOPAC tick in my book, The Political Zoo, had the nerve to come out in favor of a fake conservative, non-conservative, really, fake Republican, another all-inspector, this one, in a dress. So this is a big battle. I want you to listen, though, to Newt Gingrich's aide, Rick Tyler, who says the Republican Party can't win by division. Play clip 23.
The Republican Party can't win by division. It wins by addition and not subtraction. You know, I think back to when Newt was Speaker, and we had people like Chris Shays and Nancy Johnson and Charlie Bass, Jim Leach of Iowa, we had Jennifer Dunn of Washington, we had Jan Meyer of Kansas, and we had Tom Campbell of California. They were all moderates. They all voted for the contract with America. They all voted for Newt as Speaker. They were all, by the way, supported and endorsed by Dick Armey, who has supported Doug Hoffman in this race. And they all voted for Newt for Speaker. And when Newt was Speaker, we got welfare reform, balanced budget, we got NAFTA, we got, and I think one of the most important and interesting things, we stopped Hillary Care. And now we are not going to be in charge in the Congress if we keep going in this direction.
Another lead story is that a major league U.S. official, a former Marine, resigned over the war in Afghanistan. His name is Matthew Ho. He left the military and joined the Forest Service. The man was, you know, right up there. And the fact of the matter is, he was right. And he says, why are we in Afghanistan? We can't win. Not only did he resign from the Foreign Service, he says the war is unwinnable. He has resigned over the Afghan war is what it comes down to. Here's a newspaper roundup from around America. This is an amazing story. The Washington Post, a candidate endorsed by the Washington Post, is losing in Virginia by 11 points. This is a Democrat who the Washington Post endorsed, who Obama endorsed, who's going down in flames. Let's see what happens. Now we go to Fox News. A senior U.S. diplomat is first to resign in a protest of the Afghan war. He says the war is actually fueling the Taliban insurgency. But Matthew Ho actually says the GIs are dying for what is essentially a foreign civil war. He's a former Marine Corps captain. He's not an aging hippie from Marin County. He has combat experience in Iraq. He served in uniform at the Pentagon. He served as a civilian in Iraq and at the State Department. In July, he was the senior U.S. civilian in Zabul province, a Taliban hotbed. He says, I have lost understanding of and confidence in the strategic purposes of the United States' presence in Afghanistan, says Matthew Ho. in a resignation letter. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you that there would be an anti-war movement in America and that this time it would come primarily from the right? Yes, he is right. But here's a man whose first ambition in life was to become a firefighter like his father. Instead, after graduating from Tufts University and a desk job at a publishing firm, he joined the Marines in 1998. After 5 years in Japan and at the Pentagon, at a point early in the Iraq War when it appeared to many in the military the conflict was all but over, he left the Marines to join the private sector, only to be recruited as a Defense Department civilian in Iraq. He's a trained combat engineer. He was sent to manage reconstruction efforts in Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit. And listen to what he said. At one point, I employed up to 5,000 Iraqis, handing out tens of millions of dollars in cash to construct roads and mosques. His program was one of the few later praised as a success by the U.S. Special Inspector General. So the guy was a straight-up, honest guy. He was not corrupt. After this, he assumed command of a company in Anbar Province, where Marines were dying by the dozens. Okay? Came home in 07 with citations for what one Marine evaluator called uncommon bravery. But after all the deaths he witnessed, he said it's enough is enough. You know, and of all the deaths he witnessed, they say the one that weighed most heavily on him happened in a helicopter crash in Anbar in December of 06. He and a friend, Major Joseph T. McLeod, were aboard when the aircraft fell into the rushing waters below Haditha Dam. Ho swam to shore, dropped his 90 pounds of gear, and dived back in to try to save McLeod and three others he could hear calling for help. By the time he reached them, they were gone. So the guy has been there, he's done that, and here he is resigning not only from the military, not only from the Foreign Service, but he's saying GIs are dying for what is essentially a foreign civil war. Well, I agree with him, sadly. Politico asks, Republicans ask, in Politico, where's the outrage over Obama's golf and fundraising? Answer, nowhere. Dems seek home state exemptions from environmental rules. Houston Chronicle, college presidents say sports spending is out of control. Knight Commission says current athletic costs are unsustainable. Chicago Sun-Times says blame the dollar. Gasoline jumps 26 cents in a month. Boston Globe, pregnant women hunt for flu shot. Delays adding to fears in H1N1. Washington Post, why such a shortage of swine flu vaccine? The administration says it's the drug maker's fault. Well, we think it's government medicine at work. Again, government can't even produce enough swine flu in time for the epidemic. Fox News, cross-like t-shirt design at Penn State sparks controversy. Get rid of them crosses. Fox News, hot Mormon muffins calendar pokes fun at Mormon mom stereotype. Yeah, keep bashing Mormons. It's a real sport. Washington Times, U.S. opposes proposed defamation ban on religious speech. It's an effort launched by radical Muslim nations at the U.N. Washington Post, President G.W. Bush makes his debut as a motivational speaker. What? Who is he speaking at, the Stutterers Convention? Washington Times, Democrats play defense in 09 elections. Good luck to him. Washington Times, elections to test Obama's public image. Virginia is the most crucial of three significant races, and Obama's boy is down 11 points. Chicago Sun-Times, little buddy GPS device keeps tabs on your kid. Fox News says Chamber of Commerce is benefiting from the White House criticism of Obama. Palm Beach Post, Boca Raton grapples with exploding iguana population. Oh, my goodness. San Francisco Crown, SoCal police dog recovering after inhaling meth. What? I wonder if that was a recreational inhalation or an on-the-job problem that he had. Even the drug dogs in Southern California are now addicts? San Francisco Chronicle, 5 charged with torturing a California home loan agent. Okay. USA Today, best way to cut calories in restaurant dishes would be to trim the portions, chefs say. Sure, chefs. Sure. Why don't you just stop serving food and just serve your BS? Give them an empty plate with chocolate syrup on it and come out and double-talk them. USA Today, H1N1 flu pushing hospitals to their limit. Well, that's a newspaper roundup for today. There are many other stories that you can find up on michaelsavage.com. We've already touched on the lead one, which is the resignation of the senior U.S. diplomat over the Afghan war, because he says the war itself is fueling the Taliban insurgency. That's the lead story. You got to read the story to see what you think of it. And again, please let me remind you, on the right side of my website is an exclusive offer of the first printing. It's out there. People have gotten the books already. If you intend to order this book for the holidays, can I please remind you that the holidays are just around the corner, and the first printing, first edition is down to the last, I think, about 100 copies remain. It's only available on michaelsavage.com.
Savage.
There's been talk of sending out Social Security stimulus-type checks at a cost of billions and billions of dollars to our already overstretched budget. Joining us with a look on this is Andrew Biggs from the American Enterprise Institute.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. Good to be with you today. The danger of dispensing hundreds of billions of dollars on such a regular basis is that we can become careless about how we spend $13 billion. The enthusiasm for distributing $250 to each Social Security beneficiary is a case in point. A number of bills are circulating in Congress in support of such a payment, and President Obama has recently come out in favor. Distributing this money is a mistake on two fronts. First, it suggests that Social Security recipients are being treated unfairly with respect to the program's cost of living adjustments, called COLAs. They're not being treated unfairly. Second, it gives money to people who are relatively unaffected by the financial crisis. Here's the story on the COLA. The Social Security COLA is designed to maintain the purchasing power of recipients' benefits once they retire. Mechanically, Social Security COLAs are calculated every October by comparing the third quarter data of the Consumer Price Index for urban workers, called the CPIW, with the previous year's numbers. And then the adjustment is made the following January. Rising energy prices back in 2008 called for a 5.8% COLA to be paid in January of this year. However, before the COLA could even be paid, prices plummeted by nearly 5%. The result was that Social Security recipients got a benefit increase to compensate for a rise in prices that no longer existed. To make up for this overpayment, Social Security recipients will not get another COLA until prices rise back to where they were in the fall of 2008. This is actually a bonus for Social Security recipients. Social Security does not pay a negative COLA as you would think it would when inflation falls. Here's a little bit more on what happened last year. The CPIW, which was assigned a value of 100 back in 1984, rose rapidly through mid to late 2008. But by the time the COLA was paid in January 2009, prices had dropped back below their 2008 levels. Recipients did not need the increase to keep pace with the cost of living, but nevertheless received a 5.8% COLA. To make up, COLAs will not be paid until the CPIW rises back to the level it was at the third quarter of 2008. This means a new COLA may not be paid until January 2012. This procedure is perfectly equitable and does not disadvantage Social Security recipients in any way. In fact, they come out a little bit ahead because the real value of their benefits has increased for a while. A typical Social Security beneficiary this year will have seen the real purchasing power of their benefits increase by around 5%. Over the course of that year, that increases the buying power of their benefits by around $700. Moreover, for all but the richest beneficiaries, Medicare premiums are not allowed to increase in a year without a COLA. This could save a typical beneficiary $100 or more this coming year. Some have argued that the CPIW, which is based on the spending habits of working-age Americans, doesn't capture the larger role of health care expenses for retirees. However, even if COLAs were calculated using the experimental CPIE, which focuses on spending by individuals over age 65, there would be no COLA next year. That's how large the decline in prices was last year. If the $250 payment for seniors cannot be justified on equity grounds, how about the stimulus argument? Retirees were not hurt more than other Americans by the financial crisis and the subsequent recession. Social Security checks continued to go out on schedule. Those with assets suffered a loss, but the stock market has recovered to a substantial degree this year. The real burden of this crisis has landed on those who have lost jobs and remained out of work. The percent of the workforce unemployed for 27 weeks or more is at the highest level in the post-war period. Seniors, by and large, have not been affected by this. In short, if we have an extra $13 billion, no case at all exists for giving it to Social Security recipients on either equity or stimulus grounds. And we do not have any extra money of any sort since we face large and growing deficits as far as the eye can see. The economy may still need another stimulus to help reduce the atrocious level of unemployment, but if we're going to do it, let's spend smart.
There's been a lot of promises made on fixing the Social Security problem. Are there any signs you see that say this is going to happen?
I would be very surprised if a payment wasn't made to seniors this year. Seniors are angry if they don't receive a COLA because they don't understand how the COLA formula works. And they're also angry at the administration over President Obama's plans for health care, which would reduce Medicare benefits. So I think President Obama was trying to get out in front of the issue by promising a payment to seniors, even though his advisors must know it's not really justified. The question is, are we going to do this in a way that makes sense today and in the future? Are we going to adjust the benefit formula in a way to account for this? I'm really very skeptical about that. Social Security has already made compromises with politics by saying we're not going to have negative COLAs paid even when prices have fallen. Instead, we'll just pay a zero COLA for a year or so. That's already a compromise because it increases the purchasing power of benefits. Now we're making a second compromise and saying, well, holding the benefits constant isn't enough. We always have to have them increasing. It's a real political problem because there's competition between Republicans and Democrats for the seniors' vote. Democrats are scared because they're hurting over the health care issue. So I would be surprised if the responsible option won out in this case.
Andrew Biggs, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on again, Michael. It's good to be with you.
What are politics? What are politicians? We've heard a thousand jokes and heretic, you know. We know, and by and large, the country has worked very well over the years till now. It worked very well until Clinton came along. And then 16 years of the worst mismanagement and corruption America has ever seen has almost been fatal. And they gave us who? They gave us the matador with the sword for the final stab. Yeah, he's got the sword underneath the cloak and with a bull. With a bull about to take the picador got through with us. Bush was the picador. Bush was sticking. I told you years ago what he was. I told you. It's easy to say now. You say, yeah, they all said it. The same people who were licking Bush's boots for 8 years, the same people who were invited to the White House and now pretending that they were against Bush. They're liars, every one of them. They're an embarrassment. I have no idea how you people don't understand this. So you say, all right, stop knocking the other guys. I will. Why I do it is because I have to do it. The New Yorker called me a party of one. So to me, both parties stink, and everyone in the media is no good except me. Not everyone. There's a few people I trust. I don't know them. I haven't met them. I don't want to know them. I don't want to meet them, but I know they're there. No. There's people who write, a couple of websites left. WorldNet Daily is a great website. I told you Newsmax has become an outlet for the Clintons. You just look at it every day. Every day, the same thing. I used to know this guy. Nice guy. What happened to these people? How did they go that way? I don't understand how these things happen. I don't understand what motivates people to not think the people are that stupid they can't see it.
Savage.
Second Amendment rights, the right to bear arms. Well, that's right. Barack Hussein Obama, behind the scenes, seems to be stealthily going after our right to bear arms. Our next guest, David Rittgers, brings this up in a recent article in National Review Online entitled, Be a Good Victim. Under current law, the Second Amendment ends at your front door. David Rittgers, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
Give us some background to your article.
Right. In August in San Francisco, there was a shooting where a man with a shotgun killed two people in broad daylight, and there were two on-duty Marin County Sheriff's deputies who were within 100 yards of the shooter. They saw this take place. One of them was actually close enough to see the muzzle blast of the shotgun. And those two officers did nothing to stop this from happening. They did not intervene, and this murderer escaped, and all they did was what law enforcement agencies tell the average citizen who's a bystander to do, to be a good witness, to get a description and call it in to the authorities. But the real tragedy of this is that those two people, because of the restrictive handgun carry permitting process in Marin County, wouldn't have had the opportunity to be armed themselves and prevent their own deaths. So the message to them was be a good victim. And this is a grave injustice that the arbitrary use, an arbitrary issue of handgun permitting systems in some of the states across the nation inflict upon average citizens.
Well, what kind of reaction to the officers' actions has there been?
Well, there was some criticism of the officers, and the Marin County Sheriff, Robert Doyle, defended his officers' actions and said that there was nothing wrong in their actions, that not intervening was the right course of action, and he defended them publicly. And this is ironic because he has very restrictive permitting system for handgun carry permits in his jurisdiction and requires that the applicants meet what he considers a quote-unquote extreme need, where there is some pre-existing threat to the person applying for a handgun carry permit. And this is simply not feasible for the average person because criminals don't necessarily telegraph their murderous intentions, and you may not have weeks or months ahead of time to get the application in. You may be confronted right now out on the street somewhere.
You say the permit system is being used to take away our Second Amendment rights? How?
Right, and the fact that the Second Amendment was not recognized in accordance with the vision of the founders until just last year means that these arbitrary and capricious handgun carry permitting systems have gone on for decades, and people who might otherwise be able to prevent their own victimization, they're prevented from asserting their rights, and they're asserting their right to self-defense because of these permitting systems.
Well, in your opinion, where do you think they're going to go from here?
Well, I think it's clear that there is a right to self-defense outside of the home, and once there is recognition of this by courts, pushing governments, local governments, to issuing carry permits, I think that with this in conjunction with the pending suit, the McDonald versus Chicago case, which is basically the follow-up to the Heller case, which is a challenge to the Chicago gun ban, that would do what's called incorporation and would mandate that the Heller case, which pertained only to the federal government in the District of Columbia, because D.C. is a federal enclave, would mandate that the Second Amendment have some teeth as against the states. So take these two rulings together, and I think that success in these two suits is going to greatly increase the Second Amendment rights of citizens across the nation, that jurisdictions such as Illinois, which also does not issue any handgun carry permits, will be forced to allow citizens to protect themselves outside of their homes.
Well, will the Obama administration allow this?
Well, they're not going to have a choice, and that's the point of pursuing this via the courts, because we have a Constitution, we have a Bill of Rights. These are clear black and white provisions in the compact between the people and the government, and the government is not free to ignore these mandates of the Constitution, just by virtue of ignoring it. They can't turn their back on those provisions of the Constitution. And so there is a requirement for governments to recognize that they are not responsible for the safety of their individual citizens. And in fact, in court, repeatedly they have defended themselves against lawsuits when people have been harmed by criminals, and this harm was facilitated by the gross negligence of law enforcement agencies. So jurisdictions of any flavor local, state, federal, will defend themselves in court against any claim of liability for the criminal actions of gangsters and home invaders and armed robbers, at the ATM or wherever you might encounter someone like that. If they will defend themselves in court to say that they have no liability in these instances, then they have to give the average citizen some means to protect themselves. And in the suit in D.C., there are four very sympathetic plaintiffs. Tom Palmer, who, in full disclosure, is my colleague at the Cato Institute, is an international human rights and freedom activist, and is actually a very inspiring person to work with. When the Iron Curtain was still up, he was sneaking around in Eastern Europe with trunks full of freedom literature, trying to change people's minds about living under communist states. There are a few people who have done the kinds of things he has done in the name of the cause of freedom. One of the other plaintiffs is a patent examiner, holds a concealed handgun permit, both from Maryland and one from Florida. Another one of the plaintiffs has permits from Virginia, Vermont, and Florida. These are people, average citizens, who have taken it upon themselves to carry a handgun in public responsibly, knowing that if they do something wrong, then they will certainly be held liable by prosecution or by civil suit if they do something irresponsible or illegal. It is making the D.C. courts and D.C. government face reality that there is a liberty interest in your right to self-defense that cannot be ignored.
How are the carry permits different in the states?
Well, states run essentially in three different systems. In 38 states, there is what is called a shall-issue permit, and this is the system where if you pass a background check and you meet the training requirements mandated by the state that you're applying in, then unless you have some disqualifying criminal record or history of mental illness, then you will get a handgun carry permit that the chief law enforcement officer of the locality is required to issue a permit to you. And then in 10 states, there is what is called a may-issue permitting system where the chief law enforcement officer of the locality has the right to has the power to deny permits for basically whatever reasons they deem appropriate. And that's the situation in California, and that's part of the injustice of what happened with the shooting of the two people in San Francisco by this shotgun-wielding murderer, where the same sheriff that praises the inactions of his officers in dealing with this person shooting people in broad daylight has a very restrictive permitting system, and he calls it an extreme need rationale, where unless you meet some ridiculously high bar for issuing a handgun carry permit, then he won't give one to you. And the way that this plays out is the antithesis of due process. And if you are wealthy or politically connected, then you can certainly get a permit. And in fact, in his jurisdiction, Sean Penn was able to get a permit because he said he had a stalker who was after him. But not everyone is as wealthy. Not everyone is as famous as Sean Penn. Not everyone has the resources and the connections that Sean Penn has. And this is an inherently unfair system where rights are denied because people don't have the connections to get a permit. And add to that the fact that most criminals don't telegraph their intentions far enough in advance where you can go down to the police station, take several weeks, apply and get this approved ahead of time. You have to be proactive and be prepared to deal with an encounter with someone who would violate your rights ahead of time. And there's two states, Illinois and Wisconsin, that actually have no provision for concealed carry and do not issue any permits.
David Rittkus, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on. It was great talking to you.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Obama won't take no for an answer. So Harry Reid has figured out a way to push socialized medicine through the Senate. Around and around they go.
I'm aware of the issue of the public option. It's been a source of great discussion for many weeks now. As I've said here on a number of occasions, I've always been a strong supporter of a public option. Well, a public option is not a silver bullet. I believe it's an important way to ensure competition at a level of playing field for patients with the insurance industry. As we've gone through this process, I've concluded, with the support of the White House, Senators Dodd and Baucus, that the best way to move forward is to include a public option with the opt-out provision for states. Under this concept, states will be able to determine whether the public option works well for them and will have the ability to opt out if they so choose. I believe that a public option can achieve the goal of bringing meaningful reform to our broken system. It will protect consumers, keep insurers honest, and ensure competition. And that's why we intend to include it in the bill that we submitted, that will be submitted to the Senate.
And, of course, Chuck Schumer, the ambulance chaser, is right there with him.
Well, the reason I think there's a lot of confidence in our caucus is Harry Reid. He's the best vote counter there is. He spent a lot of time with each of them, and I wouldn't bet against Harry Reid. He was not going to, you know, our primary goal here is to pass a good, strong health care bill. We, many of us, feel strongly that a public option should be in the bill, and Leader Reid is able to weave the desires of the caucus into a sort of finished product, and again, don't bet against them. Well, if the public option works as we think it will, it's going to be different. It's going to have to play by the same rules as the insurance companies, same reserves and same requirements and same kinds of regulations. But first, it's not going to have to make a profit. That's 10 to 20% off the top. Second, it doesn't have to merchandise. It doesn't have to go out and try and sell. And third, it's going to have sort of a different view. The private insurance company is supposed to maximize profit for their shareholders. That's what capitalism is. So it's going to be a competitor on a level playing field, but with different values. And we'll have to see who likes what best.
But don't believe for a second that Obama and his minions are content to stop at the socialization of the healthcare industry. Just listen to his good friend, Bonnie Chang.
The right wing took control of government and ruined it. They gave it a bad reputation. Now that we are trying in every front to increase the role of government in the regulatory area, we run into this public opinion that says, hey, those are the guys who screwed up Katrina.
But it looks like the people are starting to wake up at last. Americans just like you are starting to protest bank bailouts across the country. When they start arresting Treasury secretaries, I'll know we're on the road to recovery. Bravo. I went to a ship. The Navy League was invited. And I went aboard the ship for the, here in San Francisco, a warship. It was, I don't know the type of ship it is. You know, they have a buffet with the roast beef and the, you know, the beer and a lot of really nice people. And all the young people are on the ship are in the uniform. And as you can't believe this. You see 18-year-old girls with machine guns, which is one of the reasons I went, because it gave me courage to see 18-year-old girls with machine guns. You know, it was on Pier 30, 32 in San Francisco. But believe me, this was not the Pier 30, 32 that was there 2 days before. When the Navy puts a warship in and they invite civilians aboard, you've never seen security like this. You know, you have to go through, like, left, right, like almost a maze to get on the ship, and they stop you, checkpoint you. It's kind of dramatic. They stop you. They make you turn your engine off. And then one guy comes out with a dog, a sniffer, a bomb sniffer dog. I liked it. I enjoyed it enormously in San Francisco. I felt safer than I did going for a plate of spaghetti in North Beach, by the way, going up there. I wish that we had dogs like that on every street corner to sniff out the drug dealers in the Mission District. The fact of the matter is, you go aboard the ship and you see all these young guys and these young women in the naval uniforms. And I told you, when I got there, I had one postcard. I have a bunch of postcards as the Savage, Michael Savage, with all my a picture of me and some stations I'm on. I didn't think of bringing any. I had one in my pocket. So at the first check-in stand, after all of the security, they look for your name on the list. And there were three people there, so I chose the first guy. And I said, my name is Michael Savage. And he looked up and he said, are you Michael Savage from the radio? I said, yes. He stood up and he said, I want to thank you He said, I've listened to you since I'm a kid. It's one of the reasons I went into the Navy. And he went on and on. And I said, well, let me give you something, a postcard. Give me your name. I'll send you a book. And he went on and on and on about it. I said, do you have a child? And he said, I do. And I said, what's your son's name? I said, you give me your name and address, and I'll send your son a special gift. You know, and this went on the whole time I was there, mainly with the younger people. And the reason I'm telling you this is not about self-aggrandizement. It's because the left-wing socialists in the media, and the reason I call them left-wing socialists, it's not oxymoron, is because there are right-wing socialists as well. Hitler was a right-wing socialist. We have a left-wing socialist party in power along the lines of Joseph Stalin, but that's a discussion for another time. So the left-wing socialists in the media, how often have they shown you a young black person in a Navy uniform or Marine uniform who loves America standing next to an American flag? They like to show you when they're dead in a body bag in order to make you hate war. But they never show you a proud young person of color, so to speak, who loves this country, do they? Because they don't love America. They hate America. And they want to turn America into something that it never was supposed to be, into a Frankenstein of itself. So that all I'm saying to you is I enjoyed it. And then some of the older guys came up. I was stuffing my face with the roast beef and the beer. I got to admit, I was starving after the show. And I'm not a big meat eater, but it's something about a buffet with free roast beef that brings out the poor kid in me. And I lined up for, you know, they only give you, have a little roll, and you come with the plate, and they cut two little pieces. How much can you get out of a little roll with two pieces of roast beef on it? I must have gone back 6 times, 10 times. I don't know what it was. I got home. I took my vitamin C, my vitamin E, and my fish oils. You know, it's like a prayer. What you do, you cheat on your diet, and then you take the nutrients that you hope counteract some of the saturated fats, and you go about your merry way. You know, before every bite you take, you have to, like, analyze things to survive in this country after the age of 30. I do like, what are they, the smoked salmon, but most of it's too smoky in California. They don't know how to make salmon out here. It's horrible. You can't even get good lox on the West Coast. I've lived here forever. It's very hard to teach people anything. Why do they smoke everything to death? It's like the coffee when they say French roast. You can't drink it because it burns your throat and gives you like a esophageal cancer. With the benzoapyrenes in the coffee bean to taste like a coffee. The same with smoking salmon. It shouldn't be so smoky that it tastes like burnt wood. Isn't there any way to make smoked salmon that isn't horrendous? Novi. I never used cream cheese. It killed half the generation that preceded me. I think the bagels and lox killed half of them along with the brisket. But I don't eat any of that poison. Ugh, I used to hate it. It was a horrible food. I remember writing when I was 18 something about Sam the Deli Man wrapping all of his poison in orange cellophane. You remember those days when the delis would produce deli things with cellophane and everyone would dip like it was? It killed half the guys. Cedar Sinai, they lived off it. They lived off the Novi and the whatever. The world's really getting me crazy. It's getting nuttier by the day.
Savage.